Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We're in the Baseball America podcast nook. Aaron's in Houston, wrapping up a weekend of college baseball at the Astros Foundation College Classic. Is that what it's called, Aaron? Astros Foundation College Classic. New name, same tournament. But, Aaron, it sounds like it was not the same quality of play and quality of event at Minute Maid Park this weekend. But we did have one team that kind of stood out above the rest. And aptly, that was number one North Carolina, which edged Rice on Friday and then scored 25 runs in its last two games against Cal and Texas A&M. I know it wasn't a smooth tournament or a well-played tournament by everybody, but did the Tar Heels look like a number one team in your eyes?
Yeah, they did, certainly. And you know, we'll talk a little bit more about all this stuff at today's Three Strikes. You know, the general lackluster showing here in Houston. You know, seven out of these nine games were lopsided and, you know, there were a ton of walks, and it was just really not a great weekend of baseball. But hey, you know, we learned something. That's why I come to this tournament every year. It's because you can see nine games in 3 days. It's like seeing three weekend series at once. And you know, I learned about Cal and Baylor and, you know, and Houston and, you know, all these teams. Some things that I learned were positive and some things were not so positive, but certainly North Carolina justified in my mind its status as the best team in the country right now, and Vanderbilt's right there with them. To me, those two teams were the two teams I was, you know, most entertaining for preseason number one. I mean, Arkansas to me was a clear third behind those two, and to this point in the season, I still think those are the two best teams. Although Mississippi State and the Beavers have something to say about that as well with the starts they've gotten off to, but. You know, but for North Carolina, I mean, I thought it was impressive the way they swung the bats. Obviously, they were counts like they always do and drew a lot of walks. But they also got big hits. I mean, you know, in addition to having 13 freebies on Sunday, you know, 11 walks and two hit batsmen, that's what 13 hits. And, you know, when they do that, they're very dangerous because we know they can pitch. You know, their arms were, you know, it was just kind of a solid performance by the North Carolina pitching staff this weekend, but you know, the fact that they were able to win by scoring a lot of runs shows a little bit of a different dimension. That you know, and they've done that before this year. I mean, they scored 18 against St. John's as well earlier this week. So they're just, I think, a pretty good, well-rounded team. And those freshmen have made a big difference. That's the only thing that jumped out to me, Johnny, is Landon Lassiter, Sky Bolt, and Corey Dunbar. It's a great core for North Carolina to build around.
Yeah, two ways to go here. We won't get too Tar Heel centric, but they are the number one team in the country, and they deserve a little bit of a deep dive here, as Chuck Todd would say. First off, this program has made its reputation in recent years and made its jump to national prominence behind pitchers with a lot of velocity, whether it was Andrew Miller, Daniel Bard, Alex White, Matt Harvey. That is not what this pitching staff is, correct, Aaron? I mean, this is Kent Emanuel and Ben Moss, who basically pitch with below average fastballs in terms of major league velocity. These guys live in the upper 80s. Both those guys, and they're both aces. I think their year and 3 weeks of track record is these guys are aces. I mean, we have more than that with Emanuel, but as a 1-2 punch, these guys are outstanding in the BB Corps era, Aaron, because they, A, hit their spots, especially with Emanuel, they pitch inside. He gets under guys' hands. And with Moss, he has a swing and miss breaking ball. So even though they don't have premium velocity, these are premium pitchers, are they not?
I agree with you there, and you know, Hobbs Johnson was not really sharp on Sunday, but he's kind of in the same mold, you know.
He's probably the hardest thrower of the three.
Well, he was more 88-89 this week, 86-89 this weekend, but he's still kind of working his way back. I suspect we'll see it take more velocity from him, but you know, but I mean, to me, they stand out as well because they do have power arms in the bullpen. You know, I mean,
right.
Luis Pollock came in and was throwing 94. You know, we know Chris McHugh's got a good arm. He was sitting in the low 90s. Didn't even see Mason McCullough. He's got the biggest arm of all of them. So, you know, and it's the depth of that staff. We've talked about that. But you're right. I mean, it's Ken Emanuel and you know, Benton Moss do it a lot different than Harvey and White and Miller and Bard. I mean, it's a different style, but it really works in this day and age.
And then the freshman you mentioned, Bolt, had come in. He was off to the best start. Right now, it looks like they're going to play Landon Lassiter. They have to find a spot for his bat. Which spot do you think defensively he fits best at? And then it looks like Corey Dunbar, just from his sheer physicality and the slow start that Matt Roberts got off to, it feels like Corey Dunbar is going to be doing the lion's share of the catching for North Carolina going forward. Talk a little bit more about their freshman.
I would really expect that as the season progresses, you'll see a lot more of Dunbar at Roberts' expense, you know, and I hate to, I'm not going to bury Matt Roberts. I mean, he's a nice, you know, junior piece to have around, but Dunbar's better, John. I mean, I was not impressed with the way Roberts defended this weekend. His arm was, you know, not, didn't look very good. I mean, a few throws that he made were offline or, you know, bounced or just not very good. And Dunbar looks the part physically. He's got more juice in his bat. I just think he's a better player. So, you know, I think that's going to happen. Lassiter, I think, will be fine at shortstop eventually. I mean, he's still kind of working it out a little bit, but I think you see the actions, and I think the arm strength is fine there. And, you know, I mean, the thing is, Michael Russell is still the guy that they trust the most at shortstop. I mean, they even made a defensive change in one of those games. I think it was, I don't know, it was the ninth inning against Rice or what, but they, you know, a game that Lassiter had started at short, they put Russell in there in the late innings and moved him in from left field. So, I mean, you know, that's the guy that they trust. They just, he makes all the plays. I mean, he doesn't look flashy doing it, but you know, he did make a nice diving stop deep in the hole just to kind of save a run. I mean, he kept the ball in the infield the other day. You know, so I mean, Russell, they got a little bit of range there, I mean, more than you think. But that said, I mean, they'll probably alternate those two guys for much of the season, at least until Lassiter, or if Lassiter really settles in, maybe they'll just leave him there. But I kind of think for a while here, we're going to see a little bit of a rotation between those two guys.
Certainly looks that way. It's the Baseball America College Podcast with John and Aaron. Aaron, the other, I guess, story kind of out of Houston, I know you're going to talk a little bit more about it, is Rice getting swept. Houston was kind of the epicenter. There really seemed like there were four really big series/events going on around the country. I know there's more than this, but we have a 30-minute podcast that we're really doing today, so we'll focus on these. You had Houston, you had the South Carolina-Clemson rivalry, which now has a nickname. What is it? The Reedy River rivalry?
Reedy River rivalry, yes.
Yeah, that's new to me. I don't think it needs that rivalry, but that name, but it's South Carolina, as usual now, winning the Reedy River rivalry. You had the Coca-Cola Classic out in Arizona with Arkansas going 0-4. And then you had Cal State Fullerton, Oregon, you know, battle of George Horton and his, you know, his successor, one of his successors and former assistant there at Cal State Fullerton, and Rick Vanderhook, kind of like Mace Windu facing off against Obi-Wan Kenobi there. I'm going to keep on making bad Star Wars references. My son plays
Yes, you are.
Way too much Lego Star Wars. I'm addicted again. Which direction you want to go there? Which is the biggest news to you? It feels like Arkansas going 0-4 is the biggest news out of those other events, Aaron.
Yeah, I mean, all three of those, I think you're right. Those are the big storylines of the weekend. And, hey, Arkansas really took it on the chin this week. I mean, you know, there's no other way to put it. They just went out there and didn't score any runs. And I know they're facing some pretty good pitching staffs. I mean, you're facing Marco Gonzalez, and you're facing, you know, those Arizona State staffs of good freshmen that they threw at them. But those freshmen, I mean, you know, you'd think the number three team in the country would find a way to grind out a few runs against freshmen, even talented ones. I mean, it's not like Arkansas didn't pitch this weekend. They pitched fine, but they didn't score any runs. And, you know, their offense just hasn't found its identity yet. And hey, there were some question marks about this offense coming into the season. I mean, you know, we talked about it. We talked about it in the preseason, about
right.
How these four guys, you know, the Serranos and the Andersons and these guys really had to take steps forward and become leaders of this offense because, you know, Matt Reynolds was gone and Carver was gone. And, you know, they had some pieces to replace here. You know, so far, Tyler Spoon had had some really big hits for them, but, you know, I'm still kind of waiting for it all to come together offensively. And I'll tell you what else with Arkansas. One of the reasons we had the number three in the preseason is because we thought it was going to be the best bullpen in college baseball with Colby Suggs and Barrett Aston at the back. And they've had to use Aston as a starter, and he's done well as a starter, so you can't criticize that move. But and Suggs hasn't been the closer, and so, you know, it's not the team we thought it would be.
Yeah, I first of all, I love the energy you got this morning. Second of all, you're right. They're just, it's just not they, you know, we cannot crown them because they are not who we thought they were. And as a result, they took a tumble in the rankings. They're down to 16 from 3. Part of that, obviously, is the other teams winning around them. But the other part of that, Aaron, is that they, like you said, they're not who we thought they were going to be. And, you know, part of that, you know, they had some injury issues early with their offense. But, you know, they got Dominic Ficicello back this weekend, and he didn't hit. And they just really haven't, like you said, none of those pieces have really come together for them offensively. The one saving grace, I suppose, if you're a Hogs fan, is that it kind of feels like last year. I don't remember them going 0-4 in a weekend last year, but Arkansas had high hopes last year, got out of the gates, it stumbled out of the gates last year, and slowly got better until they got to Omaha here. And doesn't I mean, am I off on that? I mean, it feels like Arkansas is, we've seen this story
Yeah,
before.
I agree with you, and I still believe, even after having gone on that little tangent there, I still believe that they're going to be fine. I mean, I still think they have enough arms here. First of all, first and foremost, I mean, no matter what roles they're in, there are enough arms here that it's going to be a very formidable pitching staff all season long. And it was, like I said, it was formidable this weekend. And they still have a, 1.82 staff ERA. So I mean, they're pitching well. And they're going to pitch well. And hey, the sophomores we talked about, I mean, Anderson is performing too. I mean, he's hitting 357, and Joe Serrano's gotten not off to a great start, but he's hitting 300. I mean, it's not like these guys are in the tank,
Right.
So I mean, I think they're going to be okay on offense too. I mean, I still like the athleticism. I like the personnel, but it's they're just like I said, they haven't found themselves yet. It'll take some time, but it's week three, and you know me, Johnny, I'm never going to push the panic button this early.
Yeah, we're not panicking on them, but I think dropping them 13 spots in the rankings reflects the fact they're off to a bad start. They got swept in a four-game tournament, and they're not, as good as we thought they were. So, on the flip side, on the flippity flop, in terms of moving up our rankings movement, Aaron, last week we got some heat for not moving Cal State Fullerton up enough. This weekend, with the caliber of competition that other teams played, and Cal State Fullerton continuing to winning a series against Oregon this weekend, the Titans moved up 7 spots to number 10. And I'll tell you the most stunning part of this for me, Aaron, is to see that Fullerton, that was the first time the Titans had ever started 10-0 as a
Yeah.
Division I team. That floored me. I mean, I know that Fullerton has always played great schedules, but considering they had a team that went 57-9 one year, considering they've won four national
Right.
championships, I just thought that it was logical that the Titans had started 10-0 once prior to this year. That stat is the stat of the weekend for me, non-Carlito Rodon category. So.
Yeah, I agree. I was also a little surprised by that, but you know what? I mean, that just shows you how little it means when you're playing. I mean, when you're playing Patriot League and Ivy League teams the first 3 weeks
Exactly.
of the season, and you're 12-0, who cares? I mean, get out there and play somebody, and we'll reward you in the rankings because you've proven something. I mean, you haven't proven something if you're not playing anybody. I'm sorry. I don't care if you're unbeaten.
Don't
Go play
apologize.
somebody.
You're fired up this morning. I love it.
So, yes, I mean, the Titans play some people every year in the non-conference, and that's why they don't win their first 10 games every year. And that's why it's so impressive that they did so this year, because they, again, played a good schedule, went on the road and swept TCU. I mean, and then they played a really good Oregon team, and they went 2 out of 3, lost that Sunday game, but, that's the first hiccup they've had. So, awfully impressed with the Titans so far.
And the kind of the other team that's the opposite of this, and I don't think we were anticipating talking about that, but Aaron, Mississippi State has played nobody other than
Yeah.
Samford. Mississippi
Samford
State.
and Purdue are, on paper. I mean, hey, I know this is not as good a Purdue team as last year, but those are fine teams to schedule, certainly. And they played those teams
Exactly.
twice apiece.
Exactly. Those were both regional teams from last year. Portland is it's a Northwest team. They're 3-10. They did win a game at Irvine this weekend, but they should sweep Portland.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Aaron, if you're going to play those teams, you should really dominate them. And Mississippi State has really dominated them. At the same time, I feel like we both really like Mississippi State. Obviously, we were bullish on the Bulldogs coming into the year, and they're doing some of this without two of the guys I think you and I both thought were key in terms of their offensive production going up, which would be Hunter Renfrow. He's got this little broken hand. He's missed some time. And Wes Ray, he seems to have this lower body, hamstring, quad, whatever it is, like this leg strain. And yet they're still just they've been so dominant. Do we know, does going 15-0 against their competition, does that mean more because Mississippi State hasn't dominated that level of competition in recent years? I'm not sure if I know what to make of the number three Bulldogs yet.
Well, first of all, I thought it was encouraging that the Renfrow got in there DH'd, I think, the last 2 games of the series. Was it the Sunday doubleheader? He was back in there. Or he played in some right field too, so I mean, he's back. But yeah, I mean, you're right. As far as your overall point here, you're right. I mean, there's how much can you learn from this 15-0 start? all at home, we should add also. They opened their season with 19 straight games at home. You know how I feel about this kind of scheduling. But that said, this was a team that we really liked in the preseason because of their talent. And, hey, they have justified what we thought about this team so far. I mean, I know it's not great competition, but I just love what I've seen from them in all facets. They've played so well. They've played at a high level. And so, and they're 15-0. And you know, this is not a team that's come out of nowhere here. It's a team we had high hopes for, and so far they've done what they were supposed to do. So I think this is a really, really good team.
Aaron, I'm just stunned looking at Mississippi State's schedule. They leave the state of Mississippi five times all year. They've got at Kentucky, at Arkansas, at A&M, at Vanderbilt in conference. Their other road series in the league is at Ole Miss, obviously not leaving the state. And they have one non-conference midweek game all season where they will leave the state, and that's at South Alabama. So it would behoove the Bulldogs, it would appear, to have a really good regular season so they can host a regional and a super regional. Because I don't think you want to go into a super regional with Omaha on the line where you've only left the state four times.
And that said, it's four tough SEC road series. I mean, I think they'll still be battle-tested.
The three top 10 teams and then A&M. So, which did not look good, I suppose, this weekend, correct?
Well, you know, they're just inconsistent. I mean, they did look good on Saturday. I thought, hey, this team's got some athleticism in the lineup. I mean, this is what I thought I'd see from A&M was all the speed. And, you know, they do have arms. I mean, other than North Carolina, I mean, they showed more velocity maybe than North Carolina. In rotation with Daniel Mengden. I mean, he threw harder than any of Carolina's guys. It wasn't big velocity, but he was up to 91 or so. And Corey Ray came out of the bullpen throwing 92 and got lit up. I mean, so I don't know. I mean, they've got some arms and they've got a lot of speed in the lineup, but they're just going to be up and down, and that's how they were this weekend. They were up and down.
It's the Baseball America College Podcast. Aaron, a couple other things, some of these other events we talked about. I guess I actually am leaving out one somewhat, I think, sort of major. I mentioned Carlito Rodon, and the reason I'm calling him Carlito is because his grand, he tweeted, I don't know, did you see his tweet?
That
he
said a great tweet. That was great. Tweet. I loved it.
He said his grandfather told him, Carlito, just you and the catcher, tell everybody else to sit down when you're pitching, which is awesome. But there's a reason for that, is that Carlito Rodon, his 30 strikeouts and what, two hits allowed in the last Jeez. Three hits allowed in the last 14 innings.
Right.
This guy, he hates hitters. And after that, giving up those three home runs to App State in the first game of the year, he's taken his fury out on Florida Atlantic. And I guess, what was it? LaSalle last weekend. But pretty crowded dossier of outstanding pitching performances this weekend, Aaron. Which one stood out the most to you? Was it Mark Appel dominating Texas? Was it Kevin Zomek with a career-high 15 strikeouts? It really seems like the Vanderbilt left-hander is making that next step from potential to production. Or was it Carlito?
Yeah, he is. And I'm looking forward to seeing Kevin Zomek in a few weeks against Jonathan Crawford in Nashville. That'll be a really good one.
Nice.
And Zomek, you know, he's you're right. He's taking that step forward. And so is Tyler Beede. I mean, that Vanderbilt staff coming into the season – hey, that was the one question was, are these guys going to perform as well as they ought to on the mound? Because they had all the ability in the world, and we were just waiting to see it, you know, and here it is. You know, you're looking at it. I mean, I think it's clear these guys are going to have a frontline rotation even once they get into SEC play. But, you know, Appel against a mediocre offensive Texas team, he shoved it. I mean, you know, give the guy credit. He's like Rodon. He's really bounced back strong from that. Not a great first start with two brilliant starts. But I still think Rodon faced the best offensive team out of those three pitchers and was just lights out again. My God, the guy is an animal. And I think it's laughable, all the people that were panicking or even gloating, the people who don't like Rodon after his loss to App State, and talking about how,
who doesn't like that guy? How can you not like that guy?
I mean, there's always going to be haters. Haters are going to hate.
This is something immutable. However you feel about NC State athletics, I guess there's Triangle area fans or North Carolina fans that don't like them. If you like baseball, you will love watching NC State because they have the two most fun players in college baseball, period, in Carlos Rodon and Trey Turner. There's
I
no one
agree
more fun
100%.
to watch than Trey Turner, except for maybe Carlos Rodon when he's just shoving it. Because,
right?
I mean, I'm sorry. Those guys might be the two most fun players I've ever seen in college baseball. Because Trey Turner is a pure 80 runner. And you read these tweets about them in Myrtle Beach where Trey Turner's he makes a misplay on an error. First of all, he drives on the go-ahead run in the top of the 10th for them to take a 5-4 lead on Coastal Carolina. Then he makes an error at short in the bottom of the 10th and then makes up for it with some leaping catch double play. This guy is just – number one, he's their whole offense right now.
And yeah, I know
it. He was at points last year too. And if you're going to put the whole offense on one guy, I'll put on the guy who has enough bat speed to jack one and who's unstoppable on the base paths. He is ridiculous. I mean, you guys heard me talk about this guy last year. This guy's ridiculous because he's gotten better this year. And now he's fun to watch defensively because he's in the middle of everything at shortstop. So, haters are going to hate, but I'm just telling them, don't hate on these guys. You can hate on NC State's team. There's some flaws here or there, but I like the way they've bounced back, Aaron, from it was a letdown on opening day because they had 2,400 fans there and they had Carlos Rodon, who hadn't lost since his junior year in high school, and they lose to App State. But since then, they've found many different ways to win. They've had this ridiculous SportsCenter highlight that Brett Williams turned in this week with the catch where he launched. I mean, they're a very entertaining team, and I think
they're very entertaining. I completely
have the two
agree.
Most entertaining players in the country. So,
I completely agree with that. I mean, you know, absolutely, no question about it. I said it last year. I thought Trey Turner was the most exciting player to watch, and Rodon, you know, was the most exciting pitcher to watch. I mean, those guys, you can't take your eyes off them when they're on the field. It's really a treat to watch NC State.
You absolutely,
but you know what?
Eyes off those guys. That's it.
But you know what, Johnny, Josh Easley, and Logan Jernigan may start this weekend and didn't get out of the first inning. So
that's it.
This team has warts. I mean, it's going to be a fun ride, but there's going to be bumps along the way.
That's very important to point out, and a great point to point out. Aaron, let's hit some other highlights. I'm going to go. You tell me if there's something you want to hit on. You can Skype me. But there are a couple other that Myrtle Beach tournament. That was one event that was happening this weekend. We touched briefly with Arkansas. We touched on the Coca-Cola Classic. Another nice. Let's touch real quick on Arizona State. Arizona State and Virginia come into our rankings. Arizona State went 3-0-1 down there. I guess the things that jumped out to me in that Arizona tournament, besides Arkansas, you know. Taking the gas pipe and going on four. Marco Gonzalez for Gonzaga, another one of these premium prospects who had a great weekend. And then Arizona State going 3-0-1 with a tie of Gonzaga. Sure feels like Gonzaga, which is going for number one seed in the basketball tournament, because you know they are Gonzaga. We talk about basketball. But Gonzaga seems like they're inching up there again. I mean, like the West Coast Conference is going to be so tough this year. How's Gonzaga look? Is this a regional caliber team? Yeah. And then what's your take on Arizona State going 3-0-1?
I think it is a regional caliber team, and we had it as a projected regional team coming into the season. I think we had them as the number two team in the West Coast Conference. So I just think that the pitching is very good, first of all, with Gonzalez and Tyler Olson. And, you know, Marco, I talked to somebody who was there this weekend and said it was – you know, he really just had his way with those guys, and yeah, he scattered a few hits, but I mean, he put his fastball wherever he wanted. You know, it was 88 to 90, and then, you know, and it plays up because the changeup is so good, and he knows how to use a breaking ball. I mean, the guy just knows how to pitch. I still think he's going in the first round, and I think he's going in the top half of the first round. And Jim Callis, if you're listening, you heard it here. That's what I said. That's what's going to happen.
If there's a Sean Gilmartin in this draft, that's Marco Gonzalez.
I think I still
not
think Kent Emanuel to me. I still feel like Emanuel is he reminds me more of Martin because the breaking balls are more similar. It's more about angle with them. Their fastballs are both kind of more 86, 88, maybe touching 89. Both of them had really good changeups. To me, Marco has got more velocity than those two guys. I think he's got a better breaking ball. You know, and he's it's less about angle. I mean, he's just got a little bit of a different look.
I follow you. I think the reason I made the comparison is that to me, Kent Emanuel is more physical than either of those guys, than any of these guys, and he's athletic, but he has a less athletic delivery. Delivery wise, when I watch the Marco Gonzalez, just how smooth and easy. You know, that's the thing that made Gilmartin. He makes it look easy. It's easy and it looks, it's 86, but it maybe it looks like it's 90 because it's coming out so easy. Whereas Whereas there's a lot of herc and a lot of jerk in everything that Kent Emmanuel does. So
Right.
he's got a little funk. Gonzalez is, to me, is athletic and smooth, kind of like Gil Martin. You know, it's all inexact, but I'm with you. If Marco Gonzalez keeps on dealing like this, especially in that league and in this season where he's precise, athletic, there's got to be some pro team that's going to think, you know, if we take the hitting away, maybe you get a little bit more out of him. I like Marco Gonzalez, the guy who's polished and has a chance to move pretty quickly. Just other things, I'm looking on our on the draft blog with the one of the great things that Connor Glassy does for us, the college draft prospect stat roundup. A couple things stand out to me also there is that you know, C.K. Irby and Philip Irvin at Stanford keep getting it done. We write about these guys. We write about Stanford. You know, Stanford is a I have a soft spot for the Bulldogs. You know me, private schools in Alabama. They're up my alley.
Exactly.
But how about just Philip Irvin and then C.K. Irby making the transition from closing to starting this year and a complete game three-hitter with eight strikeouts.
One of my favorite pieces in the college preview issue this year was the feature that Jim Schoner wrote on those two guys.
Yep.
I thought it captured their personalities well. I mean, these guys, they know their job is to lead this team. And they do it, and you know they have fun. It sounds like, and boy, they're exciting to watch. I mean, those guys have a lot of talent, and you know, in compact packages, so you know they're fit favorites. but it's just you know those guys. I think Stanford's gonna be a real factor because of those two players more than anything else, and obviously. But that SoCon is competitive this year. I mean, I'm kind of intrigued by this league. I think it's pretty deep. You know, and I'm not sure who if there's a clear favorite. I mean, I think College of Charleston we kind of like coming into the season. They've scuffled a little bit here and there. You know, App State has gotten off to another strong start this year. I think we thought they lost a bunch, but
yep.
You know, they're 7-2 and had that one win obviously against Redon. And you know, there's some teams here. This is an interesting league.
Georgia Southern's off to a pretty decent start. I mean, obviously written about them a little bit. Western Carolina seems like it's got a little spunk. This year. So I agree with you. The SoCon looks really strong. It's the Baseball America College Podcast. We're back on the Baseball America College Podcast. Took a little break for the Google Plus Hangout. I want to remind people that every Monday, 12 o'clock Eastern Time, 9 o'clock Aaron Fit Time, as we call it, Pacific Time, we will have the Baseball America Google Plus Hangout. 5 to 10 minutes of college baseball talk with me and Aaron, and you can see what we look like and whether Aaron's growing a playoff beard or not. this week it was Aaron from Houston. I got to tell you, Aaron, I missed seeing your Rosenblatt picture over your shoulder. That thing's awesome.
Next week it'll be back.
Back home again in Laguna.
That's right.
So, Aaron, let's take a couple questions. We want to kind of try to keep both our Google Hangout and our podcast interactive. And one of them is from last week, an email that I missed from our old friend Joe LeCates. But he went old school with an email to the podcast at baseballamerica.com email inbox. And I remind people that that's a great way to get in touch with us. He's asked for our thoughts on Virginia, eyebrow-raising individual performances. Kenny Towns with 2 grand slams in the opening weekend. Brandon Waddell, 15 strikeouts last weekend and another outstanding outing this weekend by Waddell. Is it a case of the cupcake schedule or is the squad a little bit better than expected? I'm going to guess, Aaron, that your answer is more A than B. More the former than the last.
You know, I don't know what to make of them, John. That's the bottom line. I mean, it's just hard to get a feel for how good they are because of the schedule they've played against. And you know, I like the fact that they went on the road the first weekend and played East Carolina, but they gave up 13 runs in those two games at East Carolina. And since then, the pitching has been great. Yeah, but they haven't played ACC caliber offenses or anything close to it. I mean, when you're playing, you know, Ivy League and Patriot League teams and, you know, Toledo and George Washington, William and Mary and St. Peter's, I mean, it's just, you can't get a gauge for how good they are, how ready they are for ACC competition. I know that the pitching staff went 42 innings without giving up a run, the starters, I should say, the rotation. But are you really all in on Scott Silverstein and those guys? I mean, you know, he's a wily competitor, but I mean, I'm just not excited about that staff, except for Waddell. It's been fantastic. He's exciting. That guy knows how to pitch, and he just seems like he's the next great Virginia left-hander. I mean, they've had a slew of them, obviously Holtzman, but
right.
You know, I do like the athleticism and the depth in that lineup. The you know Downs is an exciting guy that reminds you a little bit of like a young John Hicks. You know, he's just wiry, strong, and has arm strength back there behind the plate. And you know, we've talked a lot about Derek Fisher, and you know, Mike Poppy got it going a little bit this weekend. I think he's got a chance to be a good hitter. I'd like to see him kind of reestablish himself this year. You know, Brandon Cogs, well, versatile and an instinctive player. I mean, it's a good group of sophomores.
It feels like that's it. It feels like the key for them, and they start ACC player, and the whole ACC starts next weekend. It feels like the key for them is I think we know, and experience tells us that there are a lot of times you can have guys come in like Towns. Like Woodruff, who are newer players, younger players, who can get off to great starts. And last year, he was an older guy in Silverstein who got the great start in the non-conference. But once they got into league play, where you get a little bit more scouted, it's a little bit more about you know more who you're playing against as opposed to worrying just about your own team as a coaching staff. You know, you start to get figured out a little bit. You get a little bit exposed in conference play. So to me, the key for Virginia is going to be those experienced players: Brandon Cogswell, Jared King, was like a fifth-year senior. Regragnani's been around forever. Nate Irving, the veteran catcher. Mike Poppy, like you talked about. It seems like them maintaining the success is going to be about the Kyle Crocketts and the Brandon Cogswells and the guys who've been through the league and Jared King, those guys continuing to play at a high level so that those freshmen and sophomores, the new starters, when they get knocked back a little bit by the higher level of competition in the ACC, that doesn't, you know, floor Virginia, that there's still some veteran ballast for them to fall back on. And let's face it, the other veteran ballast here is a great coaching staff where they really know what they're doing and they know the league and they know their players. So I always expect Virginia to overachieve a little bit. I think that right now they're overachieving a little bit, but part of it's the competition. And we'll really see. They play Maryland next weekend. Maryland got swept by LSU to start the season, but they've won 9 straight games against similarly modest competition, and they've got a new coaching staff and John Sheff and his group to kind of grind things out there at Maryland, and it'll probably be cold. I mean, let's hope they get the series in. It's supposed to be a giant storm to hit the Mid-Atlantic this weekend, so let's hope they get the series in, and we'll know a little bit more, I think, about UVA. That's my take. And then how about the Sun Devils, Aaron? That's other new team in our top 25 is Arizona State. I guess the brief version for Arizona State is, the stars on this team, the biggest change besides this program, besides the obvious Pat Murphy to Tim Esme transition, and that's fully, you know, this is completely Tim Esme's team now. But the shift seems to have been, and it's just the natural, in the BB Corps era, this is more of a pitching team, whereas Pat Murphy, those Arizona State teams were always offensively very talented. Tim Esme's first team, the 2010 team, was a juggernaut offensively. But this team's really built around the pitching staff, whether it's the freshman Ryan Kellogg or the, you know, the Friday guy Trevor Williams or some of the other veterans in here. This is a pitching first team, Aaron.
Absolutely it is. And you know, I like the quality of the arms with Williams and Adam McCreary, the left-hander, who seemed like he's getting off to a decent start here. I mean, or I should say he got to a decent start this weekend, kind of rebounded from not a great start before that. But you know, I like, we talked about this in the Google Hangout, but I like Alex Blackford and Ryan Burr is a late innings guy, a combination that, you know, that worked in both those wins against Arkansas. Those two guys came up big. You know, Blackford's a nice, versatile veteran guy with a, you know, good breaking ball and pitchability and a resilient arm. And it's a nice piece for them. You know, Brett Lillick and Kellogg and Burr, three key freshmen for Arizona State. That's one of the reasons that we weren't, you know, we didn't have these guys in the top 25 in the preseason is because they were leaning on freshmen heavily on the mound. I mean, yes, they had Williams and McCreary, who hadn't even been established really. But you know, it's young. It's guys that needed to prove themselves. And you know, that was a good start this weekend, proving themselves against some good competition. They got some big hits too. I mean, you know, I don't think it's going to be a juggernaut offense, but I do like some of these pieces. I think Casey Kaufman's a good player, and you know, Trevor Allen is athletic and has some real power. You know, Drew Stankiewicz and James McDonald are just kind of scrappy, hard-nosed guys. It's a hard-nosed team. I mean, that's what it is. It kind of fits the Tim Esme, you know, approach. I mean, it's just his teams kind of, since he's been there, have played with the same kind of energy, and you know, it's a blue-collar lineup, which is not what you're used to seeing from Arizona State over the last decades.
That's it.
I mean,
That's
well,
absolutely it.
I should rephrase that just a little bit. I feel like Murphy's team still had that that hard-nosed approach. It just wasn't. They just had. I mean, they just had bigger names. I mean, more firepower. That's what I'm trying to say.
I follow you. That's the difference to me, is they just have more bigger name talent. They have more physical, athletic talent on those teams. And this is not, you know, not without taking a shot at anybody. It's just a matter of fact. You know, that's Arizona State is not that kind of team anymore. They can't just roll out there and you're going to look talent for talent and just say Arizona State's got more talent. That's just not happening anymore. So, Aaron, another thing that other team we want to talk about, and then we'll wrap up the podcast this week, the Irish Classic. We have two Northern teams. On the Hangout, we talked about last year's Northern teams that, you know, won regional. St. John, Stony Brook, Kent State, all struggling right now. A combined three wins. You had Stony Brook and Kent State obviously went to Omaha last year, but lost a lot. This year we have two Northern teams. I'm not counting Louisville as a Northern team. I'm sorry. Louisville is not Northern for me. But I do think, well, I really guess we only have really one. Notre Dame. It's kind of hard. Louisville is further north than Virginia Tech, but Virginia Tech is not weather advantaged, certainly, I would say. They're not geographically advantaged. They're Hokie advantaged. They travel very well, and they grind over there with Pete Hughes and what he's done. He had Pete and then, you know, taking on his former Padawan learner there, Mick Aoki. I'm sure Mick would love to be called a Padawan. Could you imagine Mick Aoki with a little braid coming down like Padawans are supposed to have? But anyway,
I'm not going to get involved with this, John.
Now I'm getting hyper nerdy. But Notre Dame and Virginia Tech both lose a game, but generally have winning weekends in the Irish Classic this weekend. I was only there for one game. It was very cold out here this weekend, and the World Baseball Classic is going on. So I went to the Notre Dame Virginia Tech game, and I saw less than 2 hours of those two teams. Mercifully, a quick game play with Notre Dame getting a 3-0 shutout. But Aaron, my impression was that Notre Dame is a slightly better team, and I like Notre Dame's defense. They were flawless behind Adam Norton on Saturday, but they've also got some real power in their lineup. Not that Virginia Tech does not, but Trey Mancini and Eric Jagielo. It's a nice middle of the lineup combo for this Notre Dame team, and it was a good look at Notre Dame for me because they did play with some precision even in the cold. And this is a team that's got, no matter where they play, those two power bats in the middle of their lineup should make Notre Dame competitive against a lot of teams.
I'm with you. I like Notre Dame's team a lot. I'm glad we have them ranked. One concern I have maybe is you know, with the depth in the bullpen. You know, they used Dan Slania for, what, 3-plus innings, I think, on the first game against Tennessee. And,
right.
And, you know, they came back and actually, the other guys picked them up. I mean, so I thought that was impressive to me this weekend. That was one of my concerns, and they addressed it. Matt Turnocheck, you know how to say that? Turnocheck?
I think you're right with Turnocheck. I think you're right.
Turnocheck, probably. I mean, five brilliant innings against, you know, UMass, albeit. But then, you know, against Virginia Tech, we didn't need any bullpen. It's nice when you got a guy like Adam Norton who can carry you that deep into a ball game, and he's just a really good college pitcher. You know, one of those classic mix-in match, not going to blow you away, but lets his defense work behind him.
That's it.
You know, and it's a good defense. I mean, you know, between Lane Richards and Frank DeCicco up the middle, and you know, Charlie Markson's very good in center field, and you know, and they've been very pleased with Forrest Johnson behind the plate. So I think they're strong up the middle.
I think that's a big key for them. I think you're absolutely right. They are strong up the middle. And so is Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech, again, defensively, I saw an error. You know, I saw Andrew Rash just drop a fly ball in center field. It wasn't a routine fly. He had to range into right center field, and it was cold and windy, and he you know, hit his glove and he just dropped it. I thought it was a tremendous job by Norton against a Virginia Tech lineup. They just, by the look of it, the top six in that lineup, Aaron, that's a lineup that's really going to compete in the ACC. Schneider, Kaselica, Chad Pinder, the crushing Russian Mark Zagunas, Tyler Horan, you know, and Andrew Rash. That's an energetic lineup. It's a lineup with some athleticism. It's not overly physical. There's not like a big donkey in the middle of the lineup, but all those guys, you know, with the exception of Horan. Horan is a donkey. and of course, I mean that with all affection. But I thought that was a good, I think that was all the more impressive for Adam Norton to mow them down the way he did. But I gotta tell you, Virginia Tech has got, I think, an ACC caliber Friday starter in Brad Markey. He was tremendous. Yeah. He was tremendous against Notre Dame. This guy was a Georgia Tech recruit and went to Santa Fe. He was up to 94 in the game we saw. He really trusts the breaking ball. Didn't throw too many breaking balls, but he was right on the borderline of throwing too many breaking balls for me, but he threw an awful lot of breaking balls. Boy, pretty outstanding effort, and he feels like he confirms that Virginia Tech is going to be a regional team for me because they've got a bell cow on Friday nights.
I think it's a great point. I was very encouraged by the report you had on him, and you know their pitching behind him I think is not special, but it's adequate because their offense is going to be so good. I think that's going to be a really fun series next week, Virginia Tech against Georgia Tech. It'll probably be a series I'll highlight in weekend preview.
Great
two
point.
The best, I think, two of the best offensive teams in college baseball. Look for some fireworks there. Although
Aaron,
Georgia Tech has pitched very well too. I mean, it's been against inferior competition generally, but they've played very well in all phases.
You know, we didn't talk about this, but we probably should talk about Georgia Tech because I think you're right. I think it's in terms of in this era, when offense is precious, you know, they've got a separating factor, Aaron, and his name is Daniel Palka. I mean, this guy has done it for 3 years, but not too many power hitters as good as Daniel Palka as far as a guy who has done it. He's done it in college. He's done it in the Cape. He's done it with Wood. He's done it with these BB Corps bats. You know, you got Zane Evans sitting there with 5 home runs and Daniel Palka with 3. Is there another, I mean, they haven't even gotten everybody going there offensively. Is there another, I'm with you. I think they are as good an offensive team as there is in the whole country. Georgia Tech, that is.
Yeah, and you know, Georgia Tech, yeah, and I think Virginia Tech is in that discussion too. I mean, I still believe in New Mexico's offense. I think it's, you know, I think New Mexico's going to be okay. They had a bad weekend again. I'm not giving up on the Lobos though. I mean, this was my preseason Omaha sleeper. They got off to a bad start last year and still made regionals. So that's just a little sidetrack there. But no, I mean, I like this Georgia Tech offense a lot. I mean, you know, because you've got variety here. I mean, you know, Kyle Wren gives you some speed and just kind of a classic leadoff guy. You know, Brandon Thomas can do everything. I mean, hit for average, hit for power, run, throw. I mean, he's a complete package. You know, Sam Dove's a really nice senior who can do a lot of different things for you. I think Matt Gonzalez is a dynamic freshman. A.J. Murray has been fantastic. You know, and those are guys that I think we kind of thought would come in and make impacts, and they have. But this is a good team.
It's a really good team, and I guess the big test for them next weekend, like you said, let's see what they could do in the ACC, not playing St. John's and Rutgers, but playing Virginia Tech's offense. And it's a big test for Cole Pitts and Dusty Isaacs and the rest of their pitching staff.
Right.
And, you know, it's obviously something has changed. It's most of the same guys they had last year back on the mound. They have a new pitching coach, you know, Jason Howell replacing Tom Kinkelar. And, you know, Tom Kinkelar had a couple guys who were undrafted out of high school, became first-round picks and Deck McGuire and Jed Bradley. And yet just, you know, Georgia Tech made a change in this offseason. And so far, Cole Pitts has pitched very well. Let's see if, you know, is Jason Howell the guy who's going to get something out of DeAndre Smelter? They got nothing from DeAndre Smelter the first 2 years. This guy was a top 100 prospect. Come out of high school, and he's got a special arm, and he's athletic, and he's physical. You know, you'd like to get something out of that guy. Last year, he didn't even travel in ACC play.
You know, and he's a middle reliever. Even now, I mean, he's had, you know, he's pitched well. He's had 4 appearances in 4 innings. I mean, it's hey, I guess it's nice to have a piece like that in the middle innings. I mean, we'll see what he can bring for him.
Right, but I'm intrigued. So if you see some improvement from Georgia Tech on the mound. First of all, we've seen it so far, but let's watch it going forward, and Virginia Tech is a great test. And, Aaron, you know, last year we used to do this a lot where we kind of looked ahead. Let's wrap the podcast. That's a great way to do it. Let's look ahead a little bit to next weekend, unless you want to touch on one more thing this weekend.
You know, we mentioned South Carolina Clemson earlier, but we didn't talk about it. So I feel like if we don't at least touch on this series, we're going to get accused of bias from the Gamecock fans.
You know what, though? You're right. First of all, kudos to South Carolina for, again, winning this series. Kudos to, and I think if you're Clemson, the good takeaway from this is, you know, Clay Schmidt, you know, he's a big deal recruit for them, obviously, and he came through. He was pretty good. I mean, for no matter who South Carolina has lost, for you to have a freshman in Clemson to go compete for 7-plus innings like Clay Schmidt did for you, that's a good sign for Clemson. So, but I mean, I thought the stat of that weekend to me, Aaron, and there's a lot of neat ones. Andrew Kiddick at South Carolina feeding us a lot of really interesting tidbits there over the weekend. But how about the fact that Nolan Belcher That's the first complete game in how long for South Carolina?
It's South Carolina's first complete game since Sam Dyson in 2010, and it's Belcher's first complete game since 2009. I mean, this guy's been there a long time, fifth-year senior. I mean, I still remember, you know, seeing him trot out there as a freshman, a true freshman, and he was a difference maker at that time, and he's had a strange road, and here he has emerged as their Sunday guy, and you know, was it a three-hit shutout against Clemson? I mean, and you know, that's that's rising to the occasion. I mean, it's a nice that they can have him on Sundays, and kind of sets up their whole staff a little bit better, because you don't have to try to shoehorn somebody else in there. You can, you know, get a little more luxury in your bullpen with Kumis back there, and you know, all the other pieces, Westmoreland. I mean, they've got a lot of depth on this pitching staff. Jordan Montgomery has emerged as this, you know, he's the next Roth type guy. I mean, he's a legit Friday guy who has performed on the biggest stage in Omaha, and you know, he came up big again on Friday. So South Carolina will be South Carolina. They will get their clutch performances, and you know, it's more of the same with this new era, this new head coach Chad Holbrook, and you know, it's just, they're just winners. They got it going.
They are a machine, Aaron. They're to the point where you take them for granted. That's a pretty big compliment. You just take their excellence for granted at this point, and the names change. You just expect, oh, LB Dantzler, yeah, he's going to be a stud. Of course he's going to be a stud. He's at South Carolina, you know.
Right.
Or yeah, that's Graham Seiko. Yeah, I mean, maybe he's not a shortstop like he was in summer college baseball. But yeah, this guy, he's, you know, he's going to have a 440 on base percentage and draw a lot of walks and set the table. I mean, you know, you lose Christian Walker and you lose Jackie Bradley Jr. the year before. You lose Roth. You're supposed to have a fall off. And, you know, you don't have really, Grayson Griner and Joey Pancake haven't even really gotten hot yet. You know, the guys, or Tanner English, the guys we thought would be the guys to get this team going. I mean, hasn't happened yet. So this team is, and there's a lot of roster depth on the mound, on the field. Like you said, to me, South Carolina, just to the point. And when you lose Ray Tanner, when you lose one of the all-timers, you're supposed to take a step back a little bit, you know, and they haven't. So pretty impressive. And you get two shutouts on the weekend. How about Clemson? So Clemson, welcome to, you know, 2013 reality with Clemson. You're 6-4. You've just been shut out twice by your rival South Carolina. And for your next act, you get to go face Garlito on the road in North CAC at NC State. What's the prognosis for Clemson going forward? This is a youngish club. They did win a game this weekend. They didn't allow themselves to get swept. We expect nothing less from a jack-legged toughness kind of club. But it just looks like it's going to be challenging for Clemson this year, Aaron.
Yeah, they're going to have ups and downs. I mean, you know, kind of like at Texas A&M, I think we talked about earlier, where it's, you know, they've got some quality pieces, but they also have youth. And I just think, I think like A&M, I think they're going to be a regional team, but, you know, they're not going to be in the mix to host a regional, I don't think. I mean, there's some players I like here. I mean, Steve Wilkerson has made that jump forward as a junior. He needed to do that, and he has.
Yeah.
He's a talented guy. You know, the freshman Duggar and you know, Tyler Krieger, shortstop. I mean, Krieger hasn't really gotten his bat going at all. He's still below 200, but Duggar's been the big contributor for them. And you know, obviously Clay Schmidt. I mean, those are that's a nice core of guys. And Matthew Crown over the left-hander. It's a nice core of guys to kind of build around in that freshman class. And veterans have performed too. I mean, with Scott Firth especially coming to mind. You know, I mean, and Daniel Gossett and Matt Campbell. I mean, they've got some anchors here. I mean, I think it's a solid club. I do. I just think that, you know, in that league, I think they're behind, clearly, that top tier with North Carolina and NC State and Georgia Tech and Florida State. And, you know, and I would throw Virginia Tech in that mix as well. And you know, Virginia to me feels a little better than Clemson, but I don't think there's a huge difference there either. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, you know, that those two teams to me both have athleticism. They both have, you know, some youth, but, you know, Clemson might have more power arms than Virginia. So I don't know.
I think you're right about that. I'm looking at Clemson's schedule too, Aaron. The other thing to me is that the schedule doesn't do them a ton of favors. You know, they're at NC State to start off. They still got to play Virginia. I'm looking at who they miss in the league. They miss Maryland. No offense to Maryland, but you'd rather play Maryland than miss them. They don't play, not only do they play Virginia Tech, but they've got Georgia Tech. They got to go to Miami. They got to go to Florida State. Just not easy. Oh, no, they do have Maryland. I'm trying to figure out who they don't have in the league, who they don't play. But it does feel like Clemson and have got to go to North Carolina. It's their youngsters are going to have to grow up quick for Clemson to, you know, get where it wants to go and get where Clemson is accustomed to going. And to the main point of this discussion is to get where South Carolina goes. They're not going to get
right.
there. They're not South Carolina. You know, they're just not. So the Gamecocks win the series again and remain the top dog in a state that, for me, right now, only Mississippi can challenge South Carolina as far as a state that's just so crazy for college baseball in terms of the attendance and the fan passion. And in terms of quality, you know, you got Mississippi with Ole Miss and Mississippi State both in the top 10. It's had the same thing here in North Carolina, obviously, with the Tar Heels and the Wolfpack. Oregon, I guess, is going to give people a run for its money with the O-State Ballers and the Ducks out there. But some hotbeds you just don't think of in college baseball. One last one also, Aaron, maybe take 2 seconds. Florida and Miami, usually that's a series we talk a lot about. Neither team ranked this week. It seemed like the Gators really needed it, and they got it this weekend with a series win. How'd that happen? What did the Gators do to rally and to win their first, not their first, but win their second series of the year?
Yeah, they were, I mean, you know, when they go in there and lose the Friday game with Crawford on the mound, you think, boy, they could be in trouble here. But, you know, they got some great work in their bullpen the next 2 days is what happened. I mean, the freshman starters kind of, you know, just okay. Get them into the fifth inning, and then, you know, and then they head off their bullpen, which is kind of how they drew it up. And you know, Ryan Harris and Magliozzi and those guys, I mean, they took it from there. And you know, Florida got some timely hitting, Justin Schaefer and Taylor Gushue, those guys that those sophomores, they're really reliant upon. You know, I mean, those are key pieces for them. They have to lead this offense now, along with Casey Turgeon, who's already kind of established himself. But you know, those guys need to do it, and they did this weekend.
Yeah, kudos to Florida, and you know, got to be a tough one for the, you know, the U to swallow there. When, you know, they win the Friday game 3-2, they're up 3-2 on Saturday and give it the fourth spot in the eighth inning. You know, we always talk about what a great job Miami does in the bullpen, and they could not hold that lead on a Saturday where they're, you know, this close. Yeah. They're basically six outs away from winning a road series and going for a sweep. I mean, it would have been a very different scene. So you got to give it to Kevin O'Sullivan and the Gators for battling back and winning that game and then winning the series.
And that happened with A.J. Salcines on the mound,
yep.
too, that four-run rally. He's their guy back there, and, you know, Florida beat their guy.
Aaron, it feels like going forward next week, we need to keep our eye on Oklahoma as a team that's off to a great start that we haven't talked a whole lot about. ACC play starts next weekend. You know, got to keep our eye on some conference series. What else is coming up next weekend? Where are you going to be next weekend?
On Classic out in L.A. We've got Oklahoma coming in, Dame, you know, going to UCLA and USC. So that'll be fun. And then probably I'd like to catch the Titans as well. They got Texas A&M. You know, need to see some more of the Aggies. Didn't get enough this weekend. You know, so it's some good stuff going on in Southern California as well.
Well, Cal State Fullerton right now, they're, you know, about as good of a story of the as there is in the country. We jumped them up seven spots in the rankings from 17 to 10. They win that series. I don't even know if we talked much about that earlier before the first part of the podcast.
I think we did, didn't we?
It's been so long, I'm not sure, but clearly they win a series. They're up to jump into the top 10. They've got what, San Diego and Southern Cal during the week this week as well. So are you going to see them midweek at all?
Probably not.
Oh yeah, you're still in Houston. Well, enjoy Reckling Park.
I will. Thank you.
Reckling Park is beautiful, and my trips to Houston have all been fond. I've only made two trips to Houston, but the All Star Game and Reckling Park, those are two great places to go. And now you're going there every year. I'm very excited for you that you finally get to go to Reckling.
Yeah, you know, it's every year I come in here and I go to three games at Minute Maid, and I never get to go to Reckling. So I figured I would make it happen with Cal State over here on Monday.
Is there an All My Children viewing party you get to go to today or no?
I don't know. I don't think Coach Graham's in the mood to watch his soaps right now. He was a little bit displeased yesterday. But you can read more about that in Three Strikes.
Great way to wrap it up. At Aaron Fitt is the Twitter handle. You could follow all of Aaron's college baseball musings there. You can see my World Baseball Classic rants and other things at John Manuel BA, and every once in a while some college baseball tweets as well. So for Aaron, I'm John. We'll see you next week on the next Baseball America College podcast. So long, everybody.